You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
Welcome to Sustainable Futures. On today's episode, we'll have the second part of our interview with Diana Bronson of the ETC Group.
You know, you may be familiar with Monsanto and some of the things they've done in terms of transforming agriculture. Well, the Etcetera Group, with many, many allies, was able to stop the commercialization of the Terminator seed, the seed that would have only grown sterile plants, plants that could never reproduce.
Right.
And, you know, that was a big victory. It doesn't mean we don't have genetically modified crops all over the place. We do, but we won out on that.
And we'll have a full interview with Joanna Mitchell of Now BC about their front porch markets.
Often you run into other neighbors while you're picking up your food, you exchange recipes, and, and you get to see what other people got. That's how I was introduced to chard, actually. A neighbor was picking up chard in my carport, actually. And I've never bought chard. You know, don't even really know what it tastes like or what to do with it. And she opens up a box and pulls out the chard from her list and goes, "Oh, yum. Wow, I've so been looking forward to this chard." So, of course, I asked, "Well, what do you do with chard?" And you know what? Chard is delicious. It's fantastic.
You are listening to Sustainable Futures. The introductory song for this show is by Moira Campbell. It's called "Like a Mountain." You may have gathered from those clips that this show is going to have a fall and rise in its inspiration. We're going to start with the second half of an interview with Diana Bronson of the ETC Group. And it's more of a downbeat sort of cautionary tale about many things that are going on. And then the second interview will be about front porch markets, and it's more of a local phenomenon of inspirational value. So you're going to leave today with good feelings. So we're going to pick up on this ETC interview, which is about geoengineering, and the ETC Group is a watchdog for geoengineering. I'm going to pick up on one of my questions where I was asking about weather modification. So here it is, Joanna Mitchell of the ETC Group.
Now, I seem to remember something about the Beijing Olympics, that they were doing something.
They were either manufacturing snow or stopping snow from falling. I believe they were manufacturing snow. Mm-hmm. That's a small-scale weather modification technique. It's done on a much larger scale, for example, in Texas, where hundreds of thousands of square kilometers are put through treatment to have cloud seeding to increase precipitation on an ongoing basis. There's a very good explanation of that in a film that came out recently called Owning the Weather.
Mm-hmm.
And those weather modification techniques have been kicking around since the 1830s.
Oh, wow.
There's a fellow by the name of James Fleming who's written a very good article on this that you can easily find just Googling James Fleming and weather modification, and he's actually coming out with a book soon, and he's looked in some detail at the military applications of weather modification, like the U.S. military did during the Vietnam War to make the Viet Cong troop movement so difficult by increasing the monsoons.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, it's definitely very...
So those have been around for a long time. I mean, there's nothing new about that. You know, it's been around for, almost 200 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, we're dealing with much more serious technology and much more potential to have an influence on large-scale things. We recently discovered a patent that Bill Gates and others have put forward. Some of the top geoengineering minds mm-hmm. have put a patent in on hurricane suppression. So can you imagine if the technology existed to suppress hurricanes and then if it was privately owned?
Suppressing them. How would they do that? Do you know? At all?
I don't even know.
No, yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So
I don't believe they do either at this point, but they've got enough of an idea about it to put in a claim.
Yeah. They see potential in something, I suppose. Myself, I think of markets for this kind of thing, because that seems to be the fundamental issue that these people in power seem to be dealing with. Is they're used to selling things and getting a certain amount of money for what they can sell, oil or whatever else it may be. And if we really changed and became more sustainable in our behaviors, then a lot of those markets would be disappearing because we'd be able to take care of ourselves. That's what I think of. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the entire geoengineering enterprise is really a bid to try and continue our lifestyles the way they are.
Yeah.
So to keep up levels of consumption and overconsumption as they are now, keep, you know, goods and services going around the world and people going around the world and all of this. And so, you know, it definitely fits in with, you know, it's the opposite of taking an attitude towards global warming, which says, as a friend of mine put it the other day, he said, so I guess what this is all about is it's easier to put sulfates in the atmosphere than take a bus, you know?
Yeah.
It is kind of like that. I thought that was a good way to put it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about the Etcetera group. So how did this group form? And a little bit more about the role of the group.
Well, the Etcetera group has actually existed for about 30 years, but it mm-hmm. used to be called RAFI, which was the Rural Advancement Foundation International. And really for the first, at least 20 years of that, was concerned primarily with issues of agriculture and genetically modified crops and the loss of farmer-conserved seeds, the introduction of agribusiness and industrial agriculture. And that just led inevitably into a whole series of other technologies such as, genetic modification, nanotechnology, synthetic biology. And so, you know, a few years ago, I can't exactly tell you exactly when. I'm not sure exactly what was the year that we changed to be the Etcetera group and took on a broader suite of new technologies to watch over. So we work in partnership with groups and social movements in a wide variety of countries.
Mm-hmm.
We're very small, so we're very flexible, and we try and work on issues and publish reports on issues that other people are not working on. So there's really very few people working on geoengineering, very few people tracking it, and it would be nice if more people would be working on it in a critical fashion, but that's just not happened yet. So that's what we tend to do. You can go to our website, and there's a whole slew of reports there. It's www.etcgroup.org, mm-hmm. etcgroup.org, and you can see what we do.
Okay. And I think about all these things going on, and it certainly doesn't seem to be like they're ever going to make the presidential address, or we're going to be told straight up about these kinds of things. I mean, there's so many things that I haven't heard of any of them. Why do you think this is being kept so quiet?
Well, on the geoengineering, it's sort of like coming out of the closet now. It used to be very, very hush-hush, but the biggest problem geoengineers have is that they don't have credibility, and that most sane and sensible people, when they hear of these ideas, go, oh my God, that can't be serious. And when they find out that it is, they're quite alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
People have a great deal of common sense. And while these technologies are incredibly powerful and so on, we're not powerless in front of them, and we can demand that there be regulation and control and oversight and transparency and all these other things. We can demand that they be stopped. That's actually what we're doing. I'll be leaving for Bangkok to go to the preparatory meetings for the Copenhagen climate negotiations, and we're very concerned that the geoengineering lobby and even some governments will be trying to insert positive language into the final text on geoengineering and perhaps getting more money for research or getting permission to go ahead with real-world experiments. So we're really going to go to Bangkok and try and make sure that doesn't happen and alert other civil society groups and governments to the fact that this might happen. And we want to try and stop it and at least educate people about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some successes in the past. You know, you may be familiar with Monsanto and
yep.
some of the things they've done in terms of transforming agriculture. Well, the Etcetera group, with many, many allies, was able to stop the commercialization of the Terminator seed, the seed that would have only grown sterile plants, plants that could never reproduce.
Right.
And, that was a big victory. It doesn't mean we don't have genetically modified crops all over the place. We do, but we won out on that one. And there's been other victories as well in terms of biopiracy and things that have been stolen from indigenous people and so on. So just have to sort of keep fighting.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke a little bit about common sense, and I have a hard time believing even the people that are putting forward this plan to fully believe in something like this. Are they really seriously thinking that that's a solution?
Well, I think some of them are acting in complete bad faith. And,
yeah.
They're either front people for the oil companies or they're just lunatics.
Uh-huh.
Others, it's not so simple, and others are seeing it, and a lot of people see it this way, and it's not a completely ridiculous point of view. This is an insurance plan. This is our plan B. This is what we'll do when disaster strikes. This is,
mm-hmm.
That's the argument that they'll be making, particularly uh-huh. with solar radiation management. They'll be saying, this is our plan B. It's incredibly naive, of course, because those same people will say, this must never interfere with mitigation, and this must not distract from government efforts to bring down emissions. Well, of course it will. I mean, that's the real politic. If a politician going to Copenhagen thinks he's got some other out, imagine if Stephen Harper can come home from Copenhagen going, well, guess what, Canada? I found a technological solution. We're going to put $300 million into that technological solution, and we're going to keep the tar sands pumping. And that's
uh-huh.
perfect for him, right? That's exactly what he'd like to do. So, it's very naive to think that you can just develop this plan B, and, you know, it will all be democratically controlled, and that the world will sit down together and decide if ever it needs to be used. It's just not the way it works. So we think that's a very naive view. All the efforts right now on global warming need to be going to bringing down emissions and to helping communities that are already affected by global warming, which numbers in 30 million people right now. I'm sorry, 300 million people right now. And these are people whose lives have been ruined, whose lands are eroding or turning into desert, and who can no longer grow their crops and who are living in desperate poverty. That's what we need to turn our attention to, not to shooting more stuff into the stratosphere that's only going to worsen their lives.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of what groups, what interest groups, maybe political bodies, governments are supporting geoengineering? Is there anyone that's doing the other side of the argument, saying this is absolutely ridiculous, kind of thing?
On the government level?
Yeah, or it could also be a corporate level.
Well, there's no government yet that has openly supported this. There have been parliamentary committee reports, and there are individuals who are like congresspeople or parliamentarians who have made favorable noises about this. I'd say the two places where that's the most likely to come from right now would be the United Kingdom and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We've had positive noises out of both of those governments. It's controversial. And they're very timid, frankly, because they know they're going to get blasted the minute they try and say that this is their new climate change strategy. So they're very, very cautious. And those who are outspoken against, I don't think I know of any right now, but hopefully we will know of some soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to think, perhaps...
It's not yet a public fight.
Yeah.
We're just not there yet.
Yeah, a lot of this is probably sort of...
They've been laying the groundwork, and laying the most important piece of laying the groundwork was the UK Royal Society report,
mm-hmm.
and that's now out. So now I think we're going to see some heavy-duty lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be real money for experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to cause some fights, too. Because in the past, when the geoengineers have tried to experiment, that's when civil society groups have gotten very mobilized and been able to stop them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know. We'll have to stay vigilant. So what are some of the groups that Etcetera Group works closely with?
Well, in the past, we've worked mostly on geoengineering. We've mostly worked with groups who live off the sea, you know,
mm-hmm.
groups like Sea Rice in the Philippines, some of the fishermen's organizations. We work very closely with farmers' organizations and peasant groups, such as Via Campesina. But there is no big international coalition right now on geoengineering. There was
mm-hmm.
on ocean fertilization. We successfully stopped one experiment. We achieved a moratorium at the Convention on Biological Diversity in May 2008. One other experiment has gone on subsequently, but ocean fertilization is actually of declining importance right now, I hope, because it's just scientifically not grounded at all. So it's come under a lot of criticism from scientists. The impacts on marine ecosystems are just so obvious and so devastating, and the likelihood of actually having a sufficient amount of algae grow so that it sinks to the bottom of the sea with a sufficient amount of CO2 to have any kind of an impact on global warming has really not been shown by any experiment to be an effective process. So, like I said earlier, the main purpose of those experiments was for people to sell carbon offsets, and that's what they're trying to do. So now that it's of such declining credibility, I would hope that within a year or two, nobody will be talking about ocean fertilization anymore. Although I'm not sure that's going to happen, but they'll be talking about other things that are equally stupid and dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and isn't that always the truth about activism, is that you can stop the plans, but you can't stop the thinking that's creating these crazy, like trying to stop war. You can stop a call to war, but you can't stop every call to war. Or do you know what I mean? What I'm getting at here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to be on your toes all the time, because it seems to me that it's the fundamentals, that the mode of thought is what's causing these outrageous or very dangerous ideas, more appropriately, maybe very dangerous ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an old way of thinking, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for being our guest here on Sustainable Futures, Diana Bronson.
You're welcome.
You are listening to Sustainable Futures on CJSF 90.1 FM. Next will be an interview with Joanna Mitchell of Now BC and their Front Porch Markets.
So this is Ryan of Sustainable Futures, and we have Joanna Michael here today. We're going to talk about Now BC and Front Porch Farmers Markets. What is Now BC?
Hi, Ryan. Now BC is a cooperative. It was formed in collaboration with several local organic farms with the interest of creating this online farmers market. The co-op then delivers food onto people's front porches all over the city. It's a way for people that don't necessarily live in a farmers market neighborhood or can't get to the farmers market, or simply during the winter when there just aren't many farmers markets to be had, it's a way for people to continue getting this delicious local organic food right in their neighborhood.
So it's online?
There's an online farmers market. Yeah, it's at nowbc.ca, and it's like a real farmers market, but virtual. It's very similar, actually. It opens on Fridays, and it runs through the weekend for people to place orders. Every week, farmers put online what they have available for purchase that coming week.
It's all photos
very
and
seasonal
things?
Food.
You can't pick up the food and examine it online, I don't think.
No, you can't. But that's kind of the best part of this model, actually. What people do is they go online on the weekend and they see what the farm is planning to have available that coming week. They pick out their items. You know, I'd like a pound of peaches, and I'd like three cucumbers and a pint of strawberries and whatever you might select at a farmer's market. And then Monday midnight is the latest you can place an order. Tuesday morning, the manager of our co-op gets up at 5 and calls the farms, many of which then go out that day and pick the food. They pick it on Tuesday, it comes into the city on Wednesday, and people participating in this virtual farmers market get their food on Wednesday or Thursday, depending on their area. So it's super fresh. It's more fresh than you can typically get in any grocery store.
And how do the farmers like it?
It was originally created for the farmers. It's great for them. It's a place that they can sell their food that basically just increases their market. It mm-hmm. helps them reach more people. And since the focus is small-scale farms, it's a huge benefit to them, because it's hard for them to get their food out to enough people since they don't have huge quantities to supply a chain of grocery stores. So, yeah, it offers them another farmer's market.
Mm-hmm. They don't have to transport their food either, I guess.
Well, what they do is they have to do is transport it once into the city, and the co-op takes care of distributing it to these 25 front porches all over the city.
Right.
It's actually not just front porches either. It's front porches, it's back porches, it's playhouses, it's carports, anywhere someone's volunteered a space that's sheltered and lit for people to come collect their food.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
I just think, too, because I've worked with farmers before and gone, and I know that it's quite a time commitment, especially from someone that's from a farm outside the city, to go into town and set up farm.
Yes.
The market, and then be there and then come back. All that time, their regular farming work is not getting done.
Yes, exactly. We're trying to fill the gap for them in a couple of ways. One is that our order deadline makes it a midweek pick for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can fill their farmers market tables on the weekend. And then midweek, you know, they have berries again, they have produce again, and they need more places to sell it in the middle of the week. Yet committing to a market, even if there were more farmers markets, is hard because it's time away from the farm. So we simplify it for them by getting the food out to the people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be at a farmers market table for hours that morning or that afternoon. And it reduces overhead for them dramatically,
mm-hmm.
as well as reaches people that they wouldn't otherwise reach in the middle of the week when they have food available again.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps with the efficiency of the food system so that all the food gets eaten while it's fresh, while it's good.
Right, no waste. Yeah.
More people have access to it. Some of these farms also have food that they can grow more of during the winter months and extend their seasons. And the reason a lot of farms don't do much of that is because there's very little access to customers to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much food we can actually grow here in this climate during the winter months, but not everyone knows that because there aren't that many farms in BC doing it. In fact, if people had no access to food outside of this province to eat from, then BC could actually only feed about 50% of its population. So we're used to buying foods from other parts of the country and other parts of the world and completely forget about, oftentimes in the winter, that there's still a lot of food here. So it's kind of strange that we eat so much imported food and then let some of the local food go to waste.
Yeah. I always find it absolutely really frustrating going to a big supermarket and seeing all this fruit from New Zealand.
Yes. Right. Well, there aren't seasons at the supermarket.
Yeah.
That's where we've gotten to.
Mm-hmm.
Though the seasons are a wonderful secret. And if anyone has seen those charts put out by Farm Folk, City Folk, and their program Get Local, it's a chart showing what fruits, vegetables, meat, fish, eggs, what sorts of foods are available from BC sources when.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow that chart, you get the best tasting food there is.
Uh-huh.
Because if you've ever bought a peach in the middle of December here, you'll know, wow, that's not very good. I thought I liked peaches, but maybe I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, peaches are only good here when they're in season because they're picked ripe and they're fresh and you eat them right away. And in that circumstance, a peach is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a peach that's picked green and it's shipped for a couple of days and then put out in the grocery store and then finally you buy it and, yeah, it's just not very good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, if you can eat seasonally and eat just what's grown here, you have the most delicious meals going.
I think now, is it kind of like they're living entities so long as they're, you know, on their tree or in their bush?
Yes.
And then after you pick it, it's sort of, the flavor kind of loses because it's sort of, in a sense, dead.
Well, my talents are not in farming, admittedly.
Uh-huh.
I have a very sad garden myself, which is part of what commits me to this cause of an online farmer's market that runs year-round because I need it.
Me too.
So I don't know exactly what happens, but I've definitely learned a tomato picked ripe off the vine and eaten within a day is far more delicious than one coming up from California that's sprayed with whatever to turn it red.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happens in that last little while it's on the vine or what happens while it's sitting in storage, but it totally changes it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the flavor is so amazing from something that's really fresh and grown in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. When it's delivered, then, it's all delivered, I guess, if it's going to maybe 25 places, then there must be a time that you have to be at your house to be able to receive it.
So here's how it works. What we do is on Wednesday morning, we pack up the food into boxes that we reuse every week,
mm-hmm.
and the truck goes out middle of the afternoon and delivers to these locations. We bring the food in these boxes. We put it on the porch. The homeowner simply volunteers the space. They don't have to be home. They put out a cooler, and we put all the cold and items into the cooler with ice packs and
mm-hmm.
Leave the other food just in waxed boxes. And our participants come and pick up the orders they've placed at their convenience. So pickups happen anytime from 4 in the afternoon until 9 o'clock that night at these various front porches. Often you run into other neighbors while you're picking up your food, you exchange recipes, and,
uh-huh.
and you get to see what other people got. And that's how I was introduced to chard, actually. A neighbor was picking up chard in my carport, actually, and I've never bought chard, and you know,
yeah.
don't even really know what it tastes like or what to do with it. And she opens up a box and pulls out the chard from her list and goes, "Oh, yum, wow, I've so been looking forward to this chard." So, of course, I asked, "Well, what do you do with chard?" And you know what? Chard is delicious. It's fantastic. It's really fun. You meet people, you pick up your food, typically everyone picking up on that front porch gets to know the homeowner, and you know, things like impromptu potlucks occur, and and
yeah.
it's really fun. It's a nice way to learn more about local foods too, because suddenly you know this community of people that are interested in the same.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there are those nights where you know you're in a hurry, you come, you dash in, you grab your groceries, you go home to make dinner. But when you have a little more time, people do tend to visit and have a good time with it. Very similar to a farmer's market in that way, having this little powwow picking out your groceries on front porches all over town.
How does the payment work? Is that done online? Is there an option to leave money at the porch or how?
There's a couple of ways. You can pay online, which is obviously preferred. That's the most mm-hmm. organized way to do it and the fastest way to get the money from here to there. Though some people also leave checks when they pick up their food, and we simply collect the checks after the drop-off, and it makes it real simple for people to start without having to worry about how do I pay online.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And
the co-op organizes all the payments, so they take the payments and then reimburse the farms.
Right. Okay.
Makes it really simple for the people buying then.
Right, so they don't have to know each farm they got each product from. And
exactly.
Okay.
That's where the cooperative comes in. They take care of the distribution of the food and the collection of payment. And the mission of this co-op is to connect local organic farms with consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working really hard to do just that. Not everyone can drive out to Agassiz to get that delicious farmhouse cheese.
Yes.
But the co-op can do it for a bunch of people, and everyone can enjoy it then.
And if you count on the cost of your gas, that cheese was really expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
When you're ordering online, can you specify an exact amount?
Online, they offer specific quantities of food, so it's the same sort of thing that you would find at a farmer's market. You'll get a pint of berries, or typically with things like squash, you order one squash, and you can order as many or as few as you want. And then for things like zucchini, usually they're sold 3 at a time. Whatever the farmer or the co-op manager decides is a reasonable quantity. There's a lot of variation, so we can supply people who are just two-person household up to a family getting 8 liters of milk every week.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is to make it really more accessible to more people, so there are small quantities and there are bigger quantities, and mm-hmm. you just select which one better suits you.
Yeah. Well, I had troubles with this sort of thing before. I used one of the delivery type things, only not online. It was very similar.
Yep.
And the smallest quantity was still too big for me.
Yeah.
So that was a problem I've had before.
Was this a box of various produce?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great model for if you could match the box to the size of household that you're feeding. But now BC is actually a lot more flexible, because if all you want to buy is a bag of peaches, then that's all you get.
Yeah.
You don't have to get the whole box, and so you can much better gauge what food you're actually going to consume.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like it for that, because they may be a small household of one person or two people, and mm-hmm. it's a lot easier than committing to a whole community-supported agriculture box that you get every week all season long kind of thing.
Yeah. And you have to be around to eat it, too, which is often a problem.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
With the Now BC Farmers Market, you don't have to commit to any length of time. You can order 1 week and not the next. And there's also no minimum orders, because there's a central drop-off point in the neighborhood, and you go pick up your food with, and we deliver lots of people's food to that porch, so you can order as much or as little as you want.
Mm-hmm.
It does make it quite a bit more flexible than some other models, for sure.
Uh-huh. What do you know about the growing itself? Is there any stipulations as to the sort of conditions this food is grown in?
Well, that is a huge focus of the market, actually. It's all organic.
Mm-hmm.
We carry almost exclusively certified organic foods, though we also support small-scale farms that are farming using organic processes, though haven't fully achieved their official certified organic status yet. By doing that, we hope to help encourage and support farms who are pursuing mm-hmm. that organic certification as well.
Because mm-hmm. that's quite a long, tricky process.
Yes, it is. Farms actually have to be growing organic for 3 years before they're even eligible to be certified.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they call them in transition during that period. Yeah, it takes a lot of commitment and a long time to establish that. But we'd love to see more of it. The people buying from our co-op are really loyal organic food buyers,
mm-hmm.
not only because it tastes better, but because it's healthier.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to an interview with Joanna Mitchell on Sustainable Futures of CJSF 90.1 FM every Friday from 3 to 4 p.m.
What kind of geographical region are the farms in this network here?
Our focus is to buy from as close as the people doing farms, you know, really small-scale farms in the city, out to the Fraser Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the majority of our food comes from. The co-op will also source some ethically traded things like coffee or chocolate
mm-hmm.
that people are interested in buying, though otherwise we stick to as close to home as possible.
Mm-hmm. And what about some things that may not be available in BC that are pretty common? Like, I'm just thinking about bananas.
Yes, bananas, the favorite fruit.
Yeah.
We do generally source some bananas, and we get them from Mexico instead of Puerto Rico or somewhere further afield.
Uh-huh.
And we'll often do that in the wintertime. There's 2 months of the year that are really the bleakest for BC produce.
Mm-hmm.
And we will pull in bananas from Mexico and a few select items from California to try and support people's groceries while during that between season time.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see a little bit of that. And the other thing that we will do is we offer Anita's organic flours. And Anita's is a BC company, though obviously grains aren't grown in BC yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the grains are coming from the prairies and getting processed into flour and oats and that sort of thing here.
Okay, flour. At first I thought you said flowers.
No, okay. Flour for baking, that kind of flour.
Yeah, okay.
So we do carry that, though with this recent development of a grain CSA here in BC, we're very hopeful that soon we'll have grain farmers here in BC
mm-hmm.
growing organically that we can start buying from.
Mm-hmm.
You will see a few things like that to help people fill out their weekly grocery needs.
Mm-hmm.
Though the co-op's focus is 90% local organic foods and connecting these small farms with people in the city to get this food out to people.
Mm-hmm. What about things that are pre-made, like breads?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll carry baked goods. We have breads in the catalog this week, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Seeds of Plenty cookies, and we carry pitas and various jams, Glenwood preserves. Mm, if you haven't ever had the chance to come across Glenwood preserves, they're delicious.
Is that a food item?
It's an organic farm in the valley that produces a lot of fresh fruits and
okay.
vegetables, and then also does some preserving. And we've been getting their blackberry jam, their strawberry jam, their strawberry rhubarb jam.
What about wine?
The co-op doesn't carry any alcohol.
Okay.
Simply because of the delivery model. We haven't ventured there because how are we going to check IDs?
Oh, right. Very true.
Right. That would be lovely, but we don't have ability to do that right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you get to find out and be in communication with the farms that your foods came from? Like, if you really like something and you want them to know, I'm sure that would be something they'd love to hear.
The online market is filled with things that our participants have specifically requested. That's what builds it, actually, is
mm-hmm.
someone who's been to the valley and has visited a farm and says, oh, we have to have this yogurt. Oh, we have to get this beef. Oh, we need to have the berries from Glen Valley Organic Farm. They're delicious. So that's where most of it comes from. And in that way, it's people are really getting involved in their food system again because what they want to eat, they request, and we get it. It's and by working together, we can bring that food in for a bunch of different people and share knowledge of what farms are here and what's available and keep abreast of what's in season.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to just step back a little bit and... Where did this idea come from? What's the origins?
It started as just a small group of foodies here in Vancouver interested in getting more of this local organic food from nearby farms. And so they collaborated to start a buying club. And from there, the idea grew until we finally had to get serious, and we've formed this cooperative, and now we're delivering upwards of $3,000 in food every week, which is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people's groceries. So we're just getting to the point where we're about 50% volunteer staff, and the other 50% are actually a core paid staff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's really taking off. There's huge demand for local foods here in the city.
Where are they delivered from? Where's the office or the warehouse? Or?
We have a warehouse at Clark and Venables. And
okay.
we do store some things like frozen meats and canned goods in the warehouse. Though most of it comes into the warehouse Wednesday morning
and
gets immediately sent
mm-hmm.
back out around the city to front porches where people pick up their food.
Mm-hmm. Does any get lost along the way?
Not usually along the way. Occasionally, you will find, we joke that this is how we get neighbors to meet neighbors and build community. But occasionally, someone will pull out the wrong milk. You'll get 2% instead of whole milk by accident.
Oh, right.
And then people, you know, usually contact someone at the co-op, and we figure out, oh, it was probably so-and-so who picked up your milk by accident, and get them in touch with each other, and then they trade.
Yeah.
Which typically isn't a big deal, because with these neighborhood drop-offs, people are usually really close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's quite funny, actually, the exchanges between neighbors who never would have otherwise met if they hadn't taken the wrong milk.
Maybe some people do it on purpose.
Well, I've wondered that once or twice, but...
How is it delivered? What's the vehicle? Is it like a... Do you have a big truck?
The RBC is very proud of our biodiesel delivery truck. It's a 16-foot, well, what looks like a moving van that we run exclusively on biodiesel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty fun, too, to be able to distribute this food with a really low carbon footprint. Even though buying local food reduces your carbon footprint dramatically, just because what you're buying hasn't had to get shipped from across the country or across the world to get to you.
Yeah. And sometimes more than once.
Yes, exactly. That's extremely impactful to the environment and the amount of energy used to get your food from farm to plate.
Mm-hmm.
Though we're very proud of the fact that we're keeping our carbon footprint low in that same vein by using our biodiesel truck to get the food from our warehouse out to the people.
I can imagine the excitement when the food arrives. Maybe, do you have any music like they have with those ice cream trucks?
Oh, I love it. Playing songs about vegetables. It's a great idea, Ryan, but we haven't implemented such a thing yet.
And also, if some people will go to the local market to see the musicians. Do you bring musicians along with you?
Another fine idea, but no. No, mostly it's just neighbors who collect to pick up their groceries and chat and kids play. And my yard is also a delivery depot, we call them. And it's really fun. We've met a bunch of different neighbors who come by to collect their food here. And, you know, on a nice day, we're out in the backyard, the kids are playing on the slide, and several other families come and pick up their food, and the kids all play together and run around, and we hang out. And the best part is that, well, like last night at a food pickup, well, I guess it wasn't last night, but Wednesday night, neighbor came by with peach pie to share, and that was fantastic. Hosting one of these drop spots has its benefits, definitely.
All right. If someone wants to get involved on the farming side, I was also thinking, how small can you be? Like, can someone just grow something in their garden and get involved on the selling end of things, or do you have to be registered? Or?
Well, you know, I had a neighbor ask about that just recently. The co-op could potentially sell someone who has food from their garden if they have enough to supply, say, a couple dozen people. And that would be enough to make it worth the trip to get the food from here to there. Though mostly for little home gardens, I suggest people share with their neighbors. You know, don't make it go all the way out to Clark and Venables and back. Just get people to eat it. There's actually a wonderful little initiative called the 1 Mile Diet, and another one called the 2 Block Diet.
Oh, the 1 Mile Diet.
Yeah, which is just a bunch of neighbors who swap food from their gardens. Yeah, it's a great idea. So we're trying to do that, too, on a little bit bigger scale. But, yeah, I love the idea of this 1 Mile Diet. And as far as farms getting involved, any organic farm can get involved. Just call us. If you have food that you need to be getting out to people and you're looking for a way to do that, especially midweek, just give us a call. What we do is we open the catalog online on Fridays, and if you let us know any time before that, we'll put your food in and sell it.
Now, if someone's going online, maybe just mention the website again.
It's www.nowbc.ca.
Is that an acronym?
It is. It stands for Neighbors Organic Weekly.
Okay.
The process is really simple. Anyone can try it. You simply go online. You need to register, which is a quick process of entering your name, address, and the location where you want your food delivered. There's a list on the website. You can look at a map and pick the one that's closest to you and place an order. You can start any week. There's no commitment to buying for any number of weeks. And if you like it, there's a one-time registration fee of $20 that is billed to you with your first order. And that is one time. You then can buy as many groceries as you want for as long as you want after that. And then for the real keeners, we are always looking for new co-op members, which is a $90 investment and helps the co-op carry a larger selection of foods.
Right. Is that how the staff get paid, or how, where does that come from?
Through memberships? No. Memberships, again, they're an investment, so in many ways it's free because as an investment, a person can also redeem their shares at some point if they decide to stop participating or need the money back out for whatever reason. The staff gets paid by people placing orders. What happens is the farm gets a certain portion of the selling price and the co-op gets a certain portion of the selling price in order to pay for the infrastructure of getting the food to the people.
Right.
It's pretty typical for a farm selling if they either pay staff to sell it at the farmer's market for them or they end up sharing some of the money with NowBC to sell the food for them. So the prices to the consumer remain consistent. They're very competitive and the same as you would find in a farmer's market. It's just divvied up differently. That said, the co-op does pretty well because we're working with so much volunteer labor. The idea is not to make a profit. The idea is to eat good food.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. It must be wonderful to be working in a place where people would volunteer to work.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
So I do that too.
I got hooked volunteering with NowBC after my first grocery order. The food was fantastic. And from farms that I didn't even know existed, really excited by it. But now that I've been volunteering with a co-op for a year, I've learned that, wow, I like the co-op for the social aspect of it as much as anything now. It's a great group of people. Both the farmers and the people buying food. It's really fun.
Okay. Well, I'm about out of questions. Do you have anything else you would like to add?
Just our website again. If you're interested in local organic food and getting fresh, delicious fruits and vegetables in your neighborhood, check us out, www.nowbc.ca. Or you can reach myself, Joanna Michael, at 604-222-0262.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joanna.
Great. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Sustainable Futures. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Next week, we'll have an interview with Sister Pat Seaman about a school that teaches classes on law and the environment. If you would like to have a record of this episode or of any other episode of Sustainable Futures, you can go to www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4, all.net. Simply go to the website, put Sustainable Futures in your search engine, and all previous episodes will be available for you. This is episode number 43. Thanks again for listening, and I am wishing you a sustainable future.